What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, managing editor, Fightful.com, FightfulWrestling.com, and of course, FightfulSelect.com, where you are likely hearing this podcast. If somehow you got a hold of it via different means, well, check out FightfulSelect.com. It is our premium service, and it is the most direct way to support Fightful.com. We've got a lot of exclusive content up there. I'm adding more and more and more all the time. Have call-up updates, stuff on Monday's Raw I had up before the show. Lots of neat stuff. And the Fightful Wrestling Weekly drops early every week. Now, I'm going to hit you guys with a programming note for the first week of January. I'll actually be dropping that weekly a day early on Fightful.com. I don't know how that will affect when it goes up on FightfulSelect.com. But the reason for that being is that the Fightful Wrestling Weekly is really our big Friday feature. We don't have a whole lot of stuff that goes on Fridays. The occasional Ring of Honor Final Battle, any Ring of Honor pay-per-view usually happens on a Saturday or Friday. My God, I'm all over the place. Bellator sometimes runs Friday, but their big tentpole events usually run Saturday. So Friday is usually a pretty quiet day. That's one of the reasons I decided to start doing the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. That way I give you all some really great content for free on Fridays. However, Wrestle Kingdom will be happening Friday, January 4th, and you'll have that. And then at, I think, 5 p.m. Eastern, myself and Warren Hayes are going live. So that will be something to watch out for. Next Monday and Tuesday, it's me solo on the Raw SmackDown podcast. They will be a bit abbreviated, as will be the New Year's Eve show. But we will still have coverage for you. I'm not going to go without that for you guys. Every single show, we are going to have coverage for you. We've been here for over 150 Raw and SmackDowns in a row. We will continue to be, even when SmackDown moves to Fridays. Had some questions about that. But yeah, not a lot will change. I hate not doing a show live for the New Year's Eve Raw, but I am not going to be on the air as the clock strikes 12. I'm going to hang out with my wife. I encourage you guys to watch the show the next day, join in, all that good stuff. I will have this week as well, if it were work, if it were a shoot, it's going to be filmed. I've got to film the Q&A for next week, so I'll probably get those questions in early. It can be really something fun doing a bit of a Christmas week show. I'm trying to put together, and I'll tell you guys what I'm trying to put together since you all subscribe to the damn service. I'm trying to put together like some sort of year-end show with Jeff, Warren, and Alex. Alex will be across the country. It'll be tough for him. So maybe Jeff and Warren can join me. I said that I wanted to do a completely unprepared and subjective award show where we didn't discuss beforehand any of the awards we selected, and just randomly each one of us rattles off an award and we discuss it, whether it be fun, whether it be serious, anything like that. And I think that Jeff and Warren would have a nice dynamic on the podcast too. I would love to get some more people involved there. But yeah, lots of stuff happening at Fightful. Next week's Fightful Wrestling Weekly and Fightful Report will focus mainly on The Story. If you guys missed The Story on Listen to Boy 102, Jimmy Van opened up about how Fightful got threatened with legal action by WWE. And he basically gave me the guidelines of what I could say, and I will follow those guidelines and interpret those in a way that I can relay them to you guys. There's not going to be a lot of wrestling news. Nobody's going to be on the road next week until the Wednesday that the show drops anyway. That's when the January or the December 26th shows hit. So that's a little preview of what you all have, a true behind the scenes of Fightful. But let's go ahead and get into this week's Fightful Wrestling Weekly. There's quite a bit of stuff, and it spans across Impact, Ring of Honor, NXT, WWE. Scary moment last night when Daniel Bryan took that 054. Now, this is a move. When Mustafa Ali was asked how he does it, he said, and I quote, "I just close my eyes and jump. Might need to switch that one up. Might need to change that." Although he hit it fine on the SmackDown after, on Andrade C and Almas, so they didn't immediately tell him, hey, stop doing that move. I was told it was a scary-looking situation from ringside. initially. But as soon as Daniel Bryan came back through the curtain, he was very, very adamant that he was okay. And he was adamant that he could go on and he could do the next show. And he was adamant that he was not hurt. Mustafa Ali could be seen apologizing to Daniel Bryan immediately. And if you're Daniel Bryan, and I'm this is me speaking for him. This isn't something that came from him. I would imagine that he probably wishes that Mustafa Ali wouldn't have apologized in the ring, because that brings more attention to it from a lot of perspectives. From a fan perspective, from a performer perspective, and from a backstage perspective. If Mustafa Ali wouldn't have called attention to it in that way, I don't know if it was as much of a concern. I mean, I'm sure that people would have pointed it out. It wouldn't have gone completely unnoticed, but it wouldn't have gone so noticed as well. I'm told that the ref and Daniel Bryan both went back to the trainer's room where they went over the situation. That's standard procedure. When somebody gets hurt in the ring, the referee goes back there to kind of talk everybody what went through the situation, assuming that he saw it and knows what happens. Because a lot of times when these wrestlers get hit or hurt, they aren't of sound mind afterwards. So you need a referee, somebody who was in there and experienced it, to kind of walk through what happened. There was a real mad dash to move on to the next tapings, because they did have to film another set of or another show of SmackDown right afterwards. Mustafa Ali wrestled less than an hour later, did his finish, so that's fine. Daniel Bryan appeared and got physical in a segment maybe 30 minutes after this happened. So he was brought back, got the apology from Ali, was telling people he was okay, was in the trainer's room, and was back out doing a segment with R-Truth and Carmella within a matter of a half hour. That's kind of impressive. Kind of impressive. Becky Lynch told Ariel Helwani this week that she actually used to train at SBG in Ireland years ago, including with John Kavanaugh, who coaches Conor McGregor. Becky Lynch mentioned that she may visit SBG, which is Straight Glass Gym, to see Conor McGregor while she's in Ireland for Christmas. But Fightful was informed that not only has McGregor not been training of late, he hasn't been around SBG and hasn't really spoken to Kavanaugh either. Kavanaugh was outspoken this week, saying that he'd need a reason to work with McGregor again, but we were also told there's no real bad blood due to the situation or that terminology. It's just John Kavanaugh wants to pick his spots with Conor McGregor and probably doesn't want to be in a situation where he or McGregor look badly. So the right matchup, probably. I would be shocked if John Kavanaugh didn't work with Conor McGregor if he wanted to. Whatever Conor McGregor says, he usually gets. But I hope that Becky does get to meet up with Conor McGregor wherever it is she goes. She's going home for the holidays, and you know, maybe she can make it happen. I just don't know if it'll happen at SBG, although I'm sure she wouldn't mind working with John Kavanaugh again. But that was just something interesting that I saw, and I reached out to one of my connections in Ireland about that, and they said no bad blood between Conor McGregor and John Kavanaugh. They're buddies. Things are fine, but they just don't. They don't talk that often. It's not like they're ringing each other up on the phone every day. I'm sure Christmas cards are sent, whatever, you know, whatever is needed there. But a good business relationship between the two. I spoke to Eli Drake recently. He talked to me about the reasoning for his re-signing with Impact Wrestling. He speculated with his level of charisma and in-ring work that he would be a prime target for WWE. And Eli Drake did straight up say he got deals offers from other people. And understandably so, he went with what was safe in his eyes. What he told me was that he looked at where he lived, the money that he made, his living conditions, his work schedule, his working conditions, how happy he was with Impact, and he thought, you know what? I think these offers will still be here in a year or so. Right now, I think this is the deal to take. As far as his body, his happiness, everything, all encapsulating, really. He said it was a situation of totality. That's me throwing the verbiage out there for him. But despite the other deals that he had, he thought that Impact was the best bet and didn't think that those deals would be gone if he chose to jump on them a year from now, or now it'll be several months from now because Impact did announce it. However, as we've learned, even though Impact announces, oh, re-signed and this person is here for multiple years, that doesn't always mean anything to Impact Wrestling. We've seen them cut people like that before. How many multi-year contracts and re-signings did we see from Bram? And he's not there. And probably because of his behavior, he's not there. But Eli Drake was once actually blackballed from WWE, but he has said in recent years that the person that blackballed him is no longer with the company. So that blackball is lifted. And from what I understand, they're on pretty good terms. I know there's a lot of people in WWE and NXT who have worked with Eli Drake and like Eli Drake, and he has a special kind of charisma as well. Talk to Flip Gordon more from that interview. He opened up about his military experience and how that prepared him for his pro wrestling career. And he says that it really came in handy when organizing travel, being dedicated, sticking to a diet, working out. All that he credited to the military. And he says that while he's living his dream as a pro wrestler, he's never home. And at the time we had done the interview, he had worked over 118 matches over the prior year across 9 countries, plus on international waters. He wrestled on the Jericho Cruise. So in addition to him working those 9 countries, you might as well say 10. He wrestled on international waters as well. He's going to be a big part of Ring of Honor moving forward. And that's something I'd spoken about in a previous Fightful Wrestling Weekly, was the fact that all these people are leaving. You have no less than 7 big names leaving. You even have Beer City Bruiser maybe leaving. We'll talk more about that later. But Flip Gordon's got to step up, and they brought in PCO and Bandido and Brody King, which, again, we'll talk about later. But Flip's one of those names, and they wrote him off of BTE, I think. After all the friendships were made, Cody says, I hope that you fucking die, and then Matt does the where do you think you're going, and they all beat him down. I think that was their way of treating him like the Big Show or the Giant. Towards the end of his WCW run, he gets beat up and kicked out of the territory of being the Elite. It's a good thing that Ring of Honor has the NWA and Pinnacle One working with them, or Lightning One and Pinnacle doing those gimmicks, those video vignettes that they're working on. That's a good deal. That's smart. That's a really good way to convey personality when you don't have the tool of being the Elite to work with. And you need that for guys like Flip Gordon especially. Also spoke to Johnny Impact and Killer Cross recently. And we talked about the overturn in roster and Impact Wrestling. And it's happening everywhere. MLW, even though it's with injuries. Impact, Ring of Honor, all that stuff. And I asked about who each man would like to see as a part of the Impact roster that isn't right now. And Cross was pretty abrupt and succinct in saying that he would want Jericho. Johnny Impact echoed that sentiment and like fondly remembered working with Jericho during their time together in WWE. Impact said that he's not called the GOAT for no reason and really put over his abilities. Impact put over the Young Bucks and Adam Hangman Page, and really went out of his way to put over Hangman Page. Hangman is a guy that Impact said that he doesn't think gets the love that he deserves. Page really impressed Impact on the Jericho Cruise and says that he considers Hangman underrated. I'll tell you, I think that Hangman stepped up and looked like a superstar at Ring of Honor Final Battle. And I don't know if he necessarily did before that. I think that was his coming out party against Jeff Cobb. And it's a shame that it happened after so many years of them trying and working and doing what they could to get him to that superstar level. I think he finally did it at Ring of Honor Final Battle. And I don't know. It's a bit of a bummer that it took that long, but he's had the ability for quite a while. He just had to put it all together. Johnny was very complimentary of the Hung Bucks, as they're called, Adam Page and Young Bucks, but doesn't think that their Halloween Super Mario shenanigans they pulled off on the cruise would work a second time. But yeah, I had a little bit of Impact stuff there for you. Moving on to Ring of Honor, we had the news up early on Fightful Select this weekend that big changes were coming to the Ring of Honor dojo. Their incorporation with the Monster Factory, specifically Danny Cage. Delirious has had a positive relationship with the Monster Factory for quite a while and appeared on several of their shows that they do. And the Monster Factory has been a really good in with Ring of Honor for quite a long time. And even more so now with Cage as operations director at the Ring of Honor dojo. Danny Cage had been teasing this news and important news and everything changes and all this stuff for weeks, if not months, on social media. And he's really good at social media. I am of the belief that a lot of his social media motivated WWE and the Performance Center to step up their social media game in that regard. Some of it is a little self-serving, but now they'll be there to get over personalities. The Ring of Honor dojo is working with Monster Factory. They're going to run Future of Honor events at the Monster Factory, which has a built-in audience. You don't have to worry about 12 people showing up. They have a facility. It's better than the Future of Honor wrestlers wrestling in front of each other and clapping along and working the matches and stuff like that. So I think it's a good move. It's wild. Future of Honor got a live event deal before 205 Live, although if 205 Live wanted one like that, they could definitely have one. It's just funny that from an official standpoint, that happens. So now you have people in this Ring of Honor dojo who are getting a more, a streamlined experience, because Danny Cage knows how to do it. I mean, he's produced he didn't produce Punishment Martinez, but he worked a lot with him, but produced Matt Riddle and a lot of other guys. There's one that I put on Fightful Select a while back, Nick Comoroto, who's, I'm told, is signing with WWE. And I think having him there to kind of oversee everything is a good thing to do. You have women on Ring of Honor TV right now who have no business being on TV who came from that dojo. Stella Gray shouldn't be on TV. She's not ready. Maybe some more oversight will help get her ready. We'll get other people ready. This deal was actually a deal that I was told was pitched as far back as 2014, then again in 2017, and then there were some pretty extenuating circumstances that prevented the deal from coming together. Kevin Kelly left Ring of Honor, caused a speed bump in the deal. Monster Factory approached Ring of Honor again this year about the deal, and it was put together. I'm told it will originally start as a month-to-month deal. Then I think they're going to try to put Danny Cage on a payroll, and he'll work with the company, much like BJ Whitmer and Caprice Coleman and other people do. And then the agreement is for a year. They'll see how it works and how everything goes there. Speaking of Caprice Coleman, not an exclusive or anything, but I saw in a recent interview that he said he has not retired, despite the fact that he hasn't worked a Ring of Honor match since March. Out of the Know is the name of the next segment in the weekly. There's a little tidbit that I had forgot to mention about NXT moving their NXT TakeOver event from Saturday night to Friday night on WrestleMania weekend. When I asked several NXT wrestlers about the move, they didn't have any idea until I asked them. They were going to be in town then anyway, so it didn't really make for a big change for their schedule or anything for them. In fact, most of them responded really positively to the news, with one saying that the more wrestling for all, the better. Another one saying that his family would much prefer Friday to Saturday. I don't envy the WWE wrestlers who have to be at the Hall of Fame ceremony and will be nodding off until midnight, 1 a.m. That is a miserable show to get through. But moving that to Friday or Saturday night, or moving that around nights, I think is a good move overall. Raw and SmackDown wrestlers were also kept out of the loop about Vince McMahon's involvement on Monday night. A few hours before the show, it became a little more widely known backstage that NXT call-ups would be on their way, but those call-ups weren't at the venue. Within NXT, it was not a secret that heavy machinery was going to be brought up, And they had their farewell on live events last week. Most were expecting EC3 to get the call virtually since he was signed to begin with. So he was also not a surprise. Nikki Cross, they had tested the waters with her. Lacey Evans seemed like the type of person that WWE would want to bring up, but I didn't have anybody in NXT that said, yeah, we expect Lacey to be called up. So that one, maybe a little bit of a surprise. Everybody knew Lars Sullivan was coming up too, so no surprise there. That's the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. Now on to the contract updates. Here's what we have right now. WWE, no major changes. AJ Styles, his contract is up in April. Nakamura's is up this year. The Good Brothers up in September 2019. They are back on TV now, though. I guess WWE realized since they have these guys for another 9 months, you might as well use them on TV. Rey Mysterio, October 2020, but it's said that he has an out clause after 18 months. Mojo Rawley through 2020. Stephanie McMahon, which gained some traction with like Argentinian sites I saw were picking up the news that I had. Stephanie McMahon listed as October 7th, 2019 as an on-screen talent. Jim Ross's deal with WWE is up in March. Mandy Rose is signed through late 2020. The Miz through 2022. Big Show through spring 2021 as a talent even though he's not working that much. He's battled some injuries of late as well. Paige, 2019, there's speculation that maybe that's why she was moved out of her GM role, but in reality, it has nothing to do with that. They were happy with the job that she had done there. They just thought it was consistent for storyline and didn't think that anybody would really care when, in fact, people did. Kevin Owens, through April 2023, he signed a 5-year deal. It is worth noting that any time he misses with injuries, it's a possibility they could freeze his contract. That's the way that a lot of WWE contracts are structured. So they might get some bonus time there, but based on what he had signed, that was the expiration date. You have Mauro in June 2019. You have a lot of people for New Japan Ring of Honor whose deals are up at the end of this year. Scorpio Sky, Shane Taylor, Hangman Page, Cody Rhodes, The Young Bucks, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, Beer City Bruiser, all through 2018. There are rumors that WWE has interest in Beer City Bruiser. Dalton Castle laughed off reports that WWE was interested in him. Christopher Daniels, I'm told, is expected to work the January tapings as he ran the gimmick where Bully Ray hit him with the kendo stick instead of Joe Koff. And that was sort of the thing that got him, or not Joe Koff, Kerry Silken, which got in the good graces of Joe Koff and got him a new contract offer on the television tapings. So you could see an extension for Christopher Daniels. He could work a little bit longer. Silas Young re-signed with the company through 2021. He said that he felt that was the right move. He wanted to be loyal to the company. The Scorpio Sky thing and Daniels and Kazarian was all addressed on Being the Elite, although cryptically. It's not hard to put the puzzle pieces together there. The clock started ticking. You had the timer winding down. That is their contract timer. Jim Ross, Josh Barnett, scheduled through January with Access, but they are effectively being replaced by Don Callis and Kelly Kelly on the Wrestle Kingdom rebroadcast. Don't know how that'll work moving forward. I do plan on reaching out to Ring of Honor or New Japan about that. Jay Lethal says that he is re-signed with Ring of Honor. Terms of the deal were not specified. They were not made public. Michael Elgin is with New Japan through January of 2020. Nothing changes there. Kota Ibushi is working as a freelancer, although there is a lot of interest in him. I mean, all over the place, and always has been. The one that surprises me the most, Shane Taylor. Next time I talk to him, I'm going to find out his contract status because he told me he's going to do what's right for his family, but did feel a sense of obligation to Ring of Honor as well. Over in Impact Wrestling, you have Moose through 2020, July of that year. Lucha Underground, Pentagon, and Phoenix are said to have a Season 5 out clause. MLW, you got that weird one with Shane Strickland. He is signed through mid-December 2018, although it was said that he signed a multi-year deal in 2018. But the rumor is that he's going to be brought into WWE in their January class, and there are rumors that the Lucha Underground deal is preventing that or slowing it down. Really hard to put a finger on that one. Pentagon, Selena, and Ray Phoenix are all said to have contracts through the end of the year, next year, 2019, with MLW. So we'll see how that all unfolds. Especially in light of this Shane Strickland situation. Injury report. Roman Reigns on Raw announced he was battling leukemia October 22nd. He's out indefinitely. A little bit of an update. He is scheduled for personal appearances in February. Braun Strowman, elbow surgery on November 26th. Expected out several weeks. May not be cleared until the Royal Rumble, but did technically perform on TLC, although not in any major capacity. Triple H tore his pec on November 2nd. Surgery on November 6th. He will still appear on WWE as an authority figure for a while, but I'm told they would be shocked if he made it back in time for WrestleMania, although it's said he will push it. Jason Jordan is working as a producer now after recovering from neck surgery earlier this year. Alexa Bliss has been sidelined with a concussion since October 20th. She is cleared for a return, according to Mark Henry, but she is battling an illness. I asked, there's no word on if she will continue her SmackDown Women's GM role. There's a very good chance that's going to be abandoned, from what I'm told. Fandango tore his left labrum in early July. He's sidelined until late this year, but he is training for his return. Goldust had double knee surgery in July. He is expected back next year. He says the end of his career is nearing. He was at Invicta recently scouting some talent. We have some updates. Sami Zayn set for his return. Vignettes aired on Monday. He had double shoulder surgery in June. WWE was very surprised that he was back so early. They were thinking WrestleMania season, as is the case with Kevin Owens. Double knee surgery in October, and vignettes are airing for his return. I was told this weekend that Kevin Owens was going to come back, and it was by a very reputable source that had no reason to tell me any different. And I was like, really? Because, I mean, the talk last week was February would be great, and they may even hold him off till WrestleMania. Meanwhile, it's December, and they're running vignettes for his return, which will not happen till January, I'm told, at least on TV. Like, I'm not going to say he won't pop up at a live event or something, because that might happen. You always want to work that ring rust off. But this is a best-case scenario in both situations, for Zayn, Owens, and WWE. I meant both cases for Zayn and Owens, but it's a great situation for WWE as well. They're getting two really good in-ring, charismatic talents that can work as babyfaces or heels back on the roster, and they're getting them back way earlier than they thought. That's good stuff. I had the news of Kevin Owens being way ahead of schedule up on Fightful Select, in case you guys missed it. Over on SmackDown, Rowan and Harper both out. Rowan tore his right bicep in August. He's expected back next year. Harper out of action since October with a wrist injury, underwent surgery. Those guys just can't stay healthy. It's a shame. Not together. Or Bray Wyatt. Sin Cara, I am told, is cleared, but is expected back next year from August 14 knee surgery. Ty Dillinger sustained a hand injury on October 29th. He began rehab on December 3rd. He will be back next year as well. In NXT, Tegan Knox tore ACL, MCL, LCL, dislocated her kneecap, tore both meniscuses. She had a scope to clear out some of the gunk in there. Tino Sabatelli tore his pectoral in late April, required surgery. He's out till next year. Dakota Kai recently suffered a knee injury. I held off until I got more on it. They fear a torn ACL. I'm sure they know by now, but they have not made any announcement, at least to my knowledge, about any status of her. But I mean, it's just speculation at this point. No serious updates over the last week, and they know by now. I mean, there's a chance that they're letting maybe swelling go down or something like that, but it'd be bad for Dakota Kai. Eric Bugenhagen sustained a concussion. Over on Impact, Sanjay Dutt has missed all of this year and December of last year with a torn right Achilles tendon. I was told that he has taken some bookings or at least appearances for WrestleMania weekend. So I'll learn more about that. Impact didn't have an update for me. Rosemary, undisclosed knee injury in February. She kept working through it. She's out of action until early next year. Over in Ring of Honor, New Japan, Shibata has a subdural hematoma. In-ring return unlikely, but he commits to a return. Hikuleo has an ACL injury from March 3rd. If they could get him back early next year, that would be a good deal. Hiromu Takahashi landed on his neck, hospitalized on July 7th. Not a lot of information emerging about his injury status. Tennille Dashwood in Ring of Honor had shoulder surgery in October, sidelined until 2019. She's been making appearances for Ring of Honor, though, so they're keeping her busy. Over in MLW, Joey Janela sidelined up to a year after September 2018 knee injury. Be wary of that one, is all I'll say. Joey Ryan suspected torn pectoral muscle in early November. Don't know when or if he had surgery, though. Marco Stunt broke his leg on November 17th, surgery planned. Ray Phoenix had a groin strain and will return in 2019. MJF was stripped of the middleweight title in mid-December and fractured his elbow in late November. He was supposed to be out 4 to 6 weeks, so should be back anytime soon. Tom Lawler working through a broken hand that he sustained on November 24th. Apparently, they're pretty confident in that because they scheduled him for a big title match. Jason Cade broke his ankle, hasn't wrestled since November 17th. He was pulled from the December 14th MLW show. Vanessa Craven broke her leg in late October. That requires surgery. This is not an MLW. This is just elsewhere. Cody Rhodes working with a torn meniscus. Surgery planned for January. Swervo hospitalized in November with a blood clot after being hit with a cinder block. Guys, thank you all so much. If you all like this or there's anything else behind the scenes or from a resource perspective that you all want me to add to this show, hit me up. Let me know about it. I want to hear. I want your input. Thank you guys so much. We're out.